you're living differently from the world around you, it can be lonely and isolating. It's been very good to have Tommy as a friend, as we kind of digest and mostly just make fun of ourselves and not take ourselves too seriously, but make fun of each other. All right, welcome back to the Till and Keep podcast. My name is Jason Craig. Like many other podcasts that talk with their friends and buddies about things, they talk about the intersection of this and that. We are usually talking about the intersection of culture and work and economy and household and all these things, particularly thinking about parents and fathers that have to deal with the realities of life. You know, the question of whether or not to bring in technology to the home, the question of how they're going to pay for this and that, how much is too much for this, how much time should be allotted to that. And a lot of us, as we've discussed with other guests on the podcast, have actually wanted to limit our choices and limit what we're going to do by making our work harder. So we've done that by choosing to embrace either a homesteading life or a farming life. And if we haven't discussed it before, if you're wondering why I use those words for different situations, they're not quite interchangeable. Homesteading would refer to what we might call subsistence farming, or just the reality of growing food on for the sake of your family. That's the primary purpose. So you would think, or providing for the direct needs of your family by your direct labor, your direct work. So homesteading would refer to your backyard chickens, your vegetable garden, your bees. And then really we could, in that category, we might want to include even hunting, and then some of the crafts around splitting wood, or I think we would even include the ability to fix and build your own home would really be under homestead, not just about food, but actually just meeting the practical needs of your family through your direct work with your family for that purpose, instead of having the intermediary use of money to either purchase the thing that you need or purchase the service that you need. Then on the other hand, there's farming, which is where you do that kind of stuff, but people pay you to do it. And it can be, sometimes those things seem like they go together, but sometimes actually they can be a challenge. And that's what I want to talk about. In today's podcast, I have my friend Tommy Van. Those of you who might have seen the upcoming book from Tan called Liturgy of the Land, this is my friend that we wrote the book together, and completely equal, right, Tommy? And Tommy's actually integral to my own understanding and tussling and wrestling with the ideas of homesteading and farming and work, because we worked together at the Apostolate Fraternus. And probably about 12 years ago, both of us were having that agrarian conversion that we talk about on the podcast of wanting to integrate our household and our work a little bit more in our local economy and our community. And I took the route of continuing work with Fraternus, continuing work through phones and computers while homesteading on the side. And although now we have a small commercial dairy, I still am on the scale of primarily homesteading. Tommy, on the other hand, went more towards farming, although we'll talk about the route he took through retail and B words like boutique stuff. And he left me behind a Fraternus cruelly in the cold to pursue his extremely lucrative and relaxing career of beekeeping. but we wrote the book together because interestingly, it has been a fruitful friendship. I don't know if I didn't have someone to constantly talk with and bounce ideas off of. Sometimes when you're living differently from the world around you, it can be lonely and isolating. It's been very good to have Tommy as a friend, as we kind of digest and mostly just make fun of ourselves and not take ourselves too seriously, but make fun of each other in our attempts to do what we're doing. But both of us are coming from the outside of the homestead inward and trying to figure it all out. But interestingly, we took the route of dairy. Tommy took the route of the bees. So we've got the lands of milk and honey between our homesteads. And Tommy now lives in Florida, so we're not in the same area, although he threatens me once a year with moving here, but he never has. And I don't know if he ever will. Anyway, Tommy, welcome to the Till and Keith podcast.
Next.
I would first, let's just go ahead and start back at the story. I don't know if the why or the what was what you were going to do was happening first. We had Craig Tafaro on the podcast, and his desire for being active led him to gardening, and then gardening led him to wanting to do more at homestead, and that kind of led him towards now he's a butcher. For you, was it more of the theoretical of, or tell me about the beginning of your story. Was it the theoretical thought of you and I discussing farming, or was it some sort of experience you were having? I know because you were starting to dabble in bees.
Yeah, it's a good question. Thanks for having me, Jason. It's always good to talk. It's kind of both. This was happening. So I was married in 2010. We had our first child in 2011. And it was kind of a series of events coming together where seeing myself as a father and not just as a husband or as an individual, you know, and it kind of took on a whole new perspective of understanding of who I was and my duty of state. And this desire to work not just for the family, but with the family was also kind of beginning to well up during that time. Kind of, I read a really short book by Stetson on successful fathers. I mean, it's like super short, pretty, you know, elementary in thought, but it was enough to kind of jumpstart this idea of I need to bring some aspect of economy back into the home and not just be a place of consumption.
Right. Well, that was the book, because you and I read that, I think, at the same time. And that was the first time I had really come to understand that, because we were working with Fraternus and we were asking, why do we have to be so intentional with the formation of young men? Why is it going so poorly today? And his answer, Stetson, was, because we're not working on farms anymore, that once we lost that hasn't been replaced. And I mean, that was his proposal, was not agrarianism. He was just observing this fact. So that, I think that was the main
point. Or the family business or the butcher shop or the wood shop or whatever it is. Yeah. So that was kind of happening. Our conversations were happening, witnessing this experience within Fraternus, and this we have to create this, you know, not machine, but like this program. And it's good, and what's coming of it is good, but it's like this kind of happened organically, it seemed, at least in times past, prior to certain revolutions or revolts. The second piece of the equation was a friend of a friend driving across country with his bees in the back of his car, like any faithful, crazy beekeeper. They were inside his sedan, got kind of cooped up, and he swerved to miss a semi truck just outside of Pensacola where I was living. And the whole hive toppled over. The guy was covered in bees. So he called up Frank Raleigh, who was a Fraternus captain. And Frank, kind of with those bees, knew I was interested in just the outdoors, got me, you know, into the beekeeping scene. And I was just instantly hooked. I couldn't believe what, you know, you open a hive, like just the complexities, yet the simplicity of what's going on. And within a period of time, I guess it was late 2011. So by late 2012, early 2013, I had abandoned Jason at Fraternus and went full time into the honey scene, producing some honey, but also aggregating honey from other commercial beekeepers in the area and selling honey under one label that was all sourced locally, and just started selling honey to grocery stores online, doing the farmer's market hustle, kind of running crazy, but it was exhilarating and exciting. And we were kind of working together and kind of just, you know, at the same time running ourselves into the ground, because I didn't know what I was doing half the time, but it was sticking, and it was, there was momentum, and things began to kind of level off as we got further into it. So that's kind of, the intro of how I got into the whole thing.
Yeah. I don't want to skip, a lot of the stories that so far asking people on the podcast, it's kind of the same story over and over again, which is I want to work and be with my family.
Yeah.
Except when I'm on a podcast. What do you, I see someone on your webcam. What are you doing there?
It's Ailey.
There's a child. Go ahead. Hey, beautiful.
I'm talking to Mr. Green.
She can't hear me talking.
Go out there. Shut the door.
It's not the, it's kind of the same story over and over again, which is a father wants to work with his family. Yeah. And so, I mean, how many kids do you guys have now?
We have four.
So the question then I'd like to ask you though, is I know that you mentioned running ragged. You and I, there's been times I remember when we had our yogurt business and I was like milk, it was on Saturdays. And so I have my, you know, the day job and then we're dairy farming on the side, which is there's, you know, part-time dairy.
Right.
And, although it is part-time, but then, you know, I was getting up at like 4 a.m. to milk and then load the coolers and drive to Asheville to the farmer's market.
Yeah.
You know, we've really had to scale back so that we can, you know, bring, because that, yeah, it was integrated when, but then I really was gone, even more, not less. So there's sometimes we romanticize farming or homesteading, not realizing what we've done. Can you, what's been your experience though? Cause, you know, you and I both were also, and I mean, I guess still, I just haven't talked to him in a while. Friends was running the Catholic Land Movement blog back then. And, you know, in an interview I saw or read or talked to him, I don't remember when he said it, but he said, you know, if you want a homestead, don't start a market garden, which is if you want to be homesteading, don't farm. So you now, I would say you're probably homesteading now more than you have since you started the bee thing. Cause you kind of went backwards from retailing honey into growing more bees.
Right.
Cause now you're a commercial, you're a wholesaler more than a retailer. Although we can talk about the candle business that you're revving up now, but
yeah. No, that's a really good,
what's been your experience now that you're homesteading more? Cause when we departed, I might've homesteaded more than you were more, I guess, farming. If you're going to talk about making money from an agricultural product. What's your like thoughts or experience about, you know, making your money from farming, versus really focusing on, you know, the integration of your homestead?
Yeah, no, it's a really good point because you're to make it in a small business. I read it in some book. It's like the riches are in the niches. And you can't compete with Walmart. You're not trying to compete with, you know, Kroger or Publix or whoever. So you got to do something really well, and you got to provide it in a way that is unique and can't be found anywhere else. Is the way we kind of I guess segmented ourselves into the marketplace. But to do that, it takes a ton of energy to market the product, to make sure it's a good quality product. And then you have all, you know, your taxes, all the things with small, you know, self-employment and small business, you're kind of like a one man, you know, wearing multiple hats. And so it's running a business. It's really running a business that is land-based, which is even trickier because you got weather to contend with in ways that, you know, you wouldn't otherwise. So, we had to, in 2020, we had an opportunity to simplify the business model. We sold off the retail brand and we just became a bulk producer, like you mentioned, where we sell honey primarily. We sell it to our neighbor, you know, a little roadside stand. But other than that, I'm not driving to farmers markets. I'm not driving to grocery stores. And we make enough honey to sell it in a larger quantity, like 55 gallons at a time, to people who all they do is pack honey. I mean, there's some level of, I guess, internal struggle with that. But because of the dream is to do it all, but it's really hard to do it all. I mean, our children are age 5 to 12. And I would say in the last 4 years, Gabriel, my son, has been really a part of the beekeeping thing. But prior to that, we have a lot of little children, it was exhausting because, you know, my wife is busy with the children. I'm trying to run the business, trying to also be present to them. But the reality is we weren't all doing it together. I mean, but whereas the homesteading thing, you can, if you, you know, trash the carrots because you forgot to, you know, mulch them, it's not gonna like crash your, you know, family budget. I mean, it does help offset it, but it's not like this end of the world where, so you can make, there's a little more leeway for mistakes and for children to be involved, I think, on a homesteading level. And it's a great place to learn and dabble in different things. And maybe, you know, maybe you take something to market eventually through that experience. You find you really love just cut flowers or whatever it is, you know, and, but it's definitely a different, I used to be in the surfing scene, and a lot of the guys that would compete say that competing would take the joy out of surfing, and they just want to be like a so-called soul surfer, you know, just go free surf. And there's something to that though. Like when you have to make money, when you got to perform, it's got to be, you know, your A+ effort every time. It's just it's a different ball of wax, you know, no pun intended, but it is. And it's just, so it's, you know, do I love beekeeping? Do I love the seasonality of it and the physical exertion and the trial and the struggle and the triumph and all of it? Yeah, absolutely. But it's become easier though, as the children have gotten older. It was crazy, you know, in those early years for sure.
Yeah. I can see we have a webcam here. If those are listening, Tommy's got the shock in his eyes, remembering, Manic Mondays, you guys called it, the day after the markets. And, well, I guess, to continue to drill down into the question though, it's been interesting as you and I began, I think because of probably our formation, our growing up, like the way you think about things is, how am I going to make money from this? And there's absolutely a need. You have to provide. I mean, there's just bills to pay. You're not I mean, the only person I know who has escaped the need for money the most would be Jim Curley, who's been on the podcast. And I talk about him a lot because he lives so simply and but a lot of us, you know, whether it's our legitimate needs or existing debts or whatever, we got to make money. But the farming, you know, and I think a lot of people start when they're dreaming it up is, how am I going to make money doing something I've never done before? Which is a big challenge that, you know, you lived through. But also, I think learning how to homestead is learning to eat what you can sell instead of sell what you can eat, and sort of starting there. And I've more and more, I guess I've stopped thinking of ways that I monetize the things I'm growing.
Right.
And there's actually been a liberation, and actually financially has made more sense for us. So, you know, we're milking 6 cows, and like, I'm realizing if we, you know, we have, you know, there's 10 people in our house, we have 8 kids. And if we make all the cheese and butter and kefir and ghee and ice cream we can, then we've offset a lot, plus eating the, you know, the beef. Yeah. So I guess my question is now, how's it going? So in case anybody missed what Tommy's talking about, he was bottling honey and retailing it primarily as a marketing, retail and sales job and then you were doing some beekeeping to kind of supplement. And now you're on the other end of that supply, which is you're growing. You have a lot more hives, you're selling in bulk, mm-hmm. and you're wholesaling it so that you're making less money per pound of honey, but it gives you more time to just focus on actually growing bees.
Yeah.
And I know that you've expanded more into homesteading. I know you've had more pigs and you've had a milk cow and such.
Yeah.
Is that something you're maturing because your kids are getting older, or you've just kind of altered how you think about what you're doing on the land?
Well, it was kind of a both. It was kind of a situation where I started the business with $5,000. And I, back in 2011, 2012, and to be able to make a living with just bee colonies and selling in bulk, you got to have somewhere on the order of 600 to 700 colonies in this part of the world anyway. And that takes a lot of capital. You know, you're talking several hundred thousand dollars of infrastructure and equipment. So I kind of started with what I had. I had a little niche. I knew some people that would sell me honey, and I started to expand the bee thing. And I guess now that we expanded the bee thing to a point where I was running bees full time and marketing honey full time and working 2 full time jobs, now getting rid of the marketing side of the business. Yeah, it's the way of life it's actually more tied to the land than I was. I mean, we have an off season. It's slower in the fall and the winter. It's crazy in the spring, but I'm not trying to also keep up with other accounts. So the way of life as a family is substantially improved. And it's it's definitely like you've kind of mentioned, yeah, it's allowed more time to homestead. I mean, we just slaughtered one of our pigs. Our cow's about due any day where we'll be back in milk again. We seasonally milk. We only have one milk cow, so we get nine months of milk, 8 months of milk, and then we're off. We get a nice off season, which I don't think I could ever be a full time dairy. But yeah, it's just the rhythm of life is more sustainable now that we kind of ebb and flow with the seasons. We homeschool. We homeschool during the busy season when I'm busy, and then we're all off together in the fall, which is really nice because then we can, you know, wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, and go do a few farm chores we have and kind of a little bit of the woodworking I need to do. And I mean, it's not like that every day, but it's noticeably slower in November, December, and January. So,
so that's interesting. A lot of people like me, so dairying works well for me because I have a full-time job and it works within the industrial model, which is just, you know, 9 to 5, whatever. But because I can work from home, like a lot of people, I can make that work. So dairy farming for me, it's sort of unending, but we don't have the seasonality. I mean, we kind of like it day in and day out, dude. It's more of which can be bad. It can seem like a machine, but actually for us, it is more monastic, I guess. It's just our, you know, milking every day is just what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. But it I guess it does have changes with grass and weather and all of that. But so a lot of people do that. They make it work with that. So your homesteading, like a lot of people, is supplemental to your job, right, your work, your small business, which is beekeeping. But the nature of it, because it is agricultural, that's an interesting, like, you have an entire season. Instead of scheduling a vacation, it's like you kind of have a season when you're available.
Yeah.
Which is.
Yeah. We pretty much.
That's different from like what.
Right. No, it is. I mean, we're forced to like say no to family vacations and travel as much as there's a pilgrimage every spring I would love to do, but I can never do it because it's absolutely insane. Yeah. April around Easter. I mean, I can, you know, squeak out the time around the Triduum, but it's tough to go anywhere really. But you know, October, November, December, I'm like calling Jason up looking for something to do, you know?
Let's go. Let's have a conference. That's fun. Which, by the way, we're, my sons are completely. So Henry did shoot his deer, on the property this year, his first one, but, next year they're all just banking on, going with you to your,
that'd be great.
Wherever you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gabe was bragging about all his butt.
That's funny.
All right. So you and I, both of us, I mean, we're coming from completely different backgrounds, but both of them are not farming.
That's right.
And this is something that you've had to learn. I know you had, you're from the Woodlands in Texas, which is a fairly massive, sprawling
utopia
suburb.
Yeah.
I'm joking. Your wife's also she is not from any kind of farming or background like mine. So how has the change from, you know, the full retail to more homesteading, how has that affected her and sort of her sense of being integrated with your work, managing the home and that sort of thing?
Yeah. I mean, it's become more, there's more of a rhythm. I mean, it was just always like, just go, 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 go because it's like when the bee thing slowed down in the wintertime, when we were retailing honey, retail sales would just go through the roof in November and December during, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas. So there was never a slow time. So she, you know, she, I think, appreciates the rhythm of the seasonal work a lot more. And, I mean, the reality is, you know, she's not out in the bee yard with me, but my work really does affect, you know, the rhythm of the family when we eat dinner, when we don't, you know, if I'm moving bees at nighttime, okay, we're doing the rosary during the middle of the day and, you know, eating an early dinner. And then, you know, Gabriel and I are going to go move bees around sunset. So everything kind of flows, the family schedule shifts a bit, you know, based on what the bees need, you know, during that time of the year. But it is nice to be able to turn it off for several months and the family is always the priority at that point. I mean, the family is always a priority, but it's just, it shifts with the demands of the work, as far as, the time allocation. So, but yeah, I mean, it's, as the girls are, I mean, that was part of the reason, I guess, we have this stockpile of beeswax, and we have three girls and one boy, and they want to make a little bit of money. That, you know, our oldest wants to buy a horse. I'm like, well, you got to feed the horse. So the candle idea was kind of like, that was this idea of selling candles, but I'm like, I'm not going to be peddling candles like everywhere. And if we're going to do it, I just want to have a simple marketing strategy and just, you know, we're just going to do it online. So that's kind of, as the, you know, the children are getting older and with more girls, we're letting them kind of, you know, take a bigger part in that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So tell me you went into retail, backed into farming via retail, went into wholesaling, and now you have this stockpile of beeswax. So now you're making 100% beeswax candles. It's called, what's it? Ambrosian Candles.
Yeah, ambrosiancandles.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
oh man, nice plug. Good job. So yeah, I saw an ad you had the other day with just crack, and I've been repeating it to people. Atheists use paraffin, Catholics use wax. So you're selling candles, and you're clearly, you know, yeah. I mean the story behind them of that, you know, these are 100% beeswax candles from a Catholic family that loves the bees, it's like a no brainer. And it's also interesting because it's one of those areas where I think those of us that are wanting to homestead and live in this way of life, you know, we want the local economy, but sometimes, I mean, you know, the people who buy the worst food and eat without care are often out in the rural areas. So it's not as if I'm surrounded by, you know, customers that want high quality. So the internet provides this strange, you know, ability to retail that. But the more interesting thing though, is you're now, instead of, forcing, your family that this new way of life when you're retailing is actually, this is growing. I mean, from what I can observe, it seems like it's growing from the available labor and the desire to be a part of it, which is your girls, and then you know, the mountains of wax you're building up. So is that something that they're, is that, I know that Gabe is like at your, Gabriel, your son, we have one kid, one son, is always at your side, basically moving bee boxes. My kids always talk about, like, he's the strongest, however old he is, 9-year-old, 10-year-old, they've ever met, from just moving, you know, bees constantly with you. But then, so is this something that the girls have embraced and taken on, or did you just set them to work?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been kind of a conversation. I mean, we've always made our own candles I say always, in the last, you know, 5 to 8 years, we've started making candles for ourselves and for just our prayer altar and for the Advent candles. And then we started making some for friends and then for the chapel and where we attend mass. And so it's kind of been a natural progression, you know, Emily has definitely been the creative mind behind all of it, like with the, which candles and this or that, or, you know, gift packaging concepts and all that. And she kind of creates the system, the idea, but she's just, you know, busy homeschooling and being a mother and a wife. So she's not necessarily always in there pouring candles, but the girls help. And then we have a couple of girls from that attend, that go to mass with us, and they help us as well. They're 15, 16, so they're a little older, but it's just been a nice dynamic to have that, you know, that mentorship there where they kind of look up to these older girls and they're a part of that. And then, yeah, Gabriel's just, I think if he didn't have to do another day of school, he'd be perfectly fine and just, you know, be out there in the bobcat or moving bees or whatever.
I highly recommend, I did an interview on the podcast with Jordan Almanzar, who wrote When the Earth Was Flat. And he just describes he was homeschooled like in the late 80s and 90s, I think. Oh, wow. And basically unschooled, and it was, and now he's a scholar, and everyone's just worried too much.
Really?
Just let your boys have adventures and be dangerous. Huh. And oh, it was great. You'll like it.
What's the name of that again?
That's it's When the Earth Was Flat, Jordan Almanzar. We sent it out to Spade Guild subscribers, but so the the same thing is happening with us. I mean, I think one encouragement in the story as you're talking, I'm reflecting, is that a lot of to create the culture of an integrated home and a homestead really quick. And I almost feel like we're just getting there. 12 years in, we're just sort of realizing what our order and our culture can look like.
No doubt.
And the way I know that is that, it did help because you and I both, the good thing is that our kids were young when we started. But now, when I was first running spreadsheets endlessly about how to make a killing from, you know, 6 dairy cows, and it was, you know, cheese. It was like, we're going to make so much money making this boutique cheese. We're going to retail. But the reality of what that would take to make that happen would not fit with our right. homeschooling and my other yeah. work. But now my daughter, you know, Margaret Mary's 14
yeah.
is, you know, she's making cheese, but she's making it for the home and she has more interest in it. She's reading all these books and it went from, you know, how cheese is made to the history of cheese to now it's like, well, she's reading one on, you know, running a small cheese business. And, you know, that she has the possibility of that
yeah.
continuing.
Yeah.
I had to come to peace with, like, you know, I don't have to legitimize everything with a profitability and monetarily, but that I do need to focus on the culture of the family and if our work is really providing for us directly. I guess that's how I know when we're doing it. And directly with our local community, it's for another podcast, but we stopped retailing yogurt. Not only because our barn burned down, but because COVID made me realize that I was driving all over Western North Carolina to sell boutique yogurt, and I wasn't even selling milk to my neighbors who wanted it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
that's another story.
Yeah. No, there's,
but it sounds like you guys are that's maturing now, that you're actually kind of having the next generation step in and having their own initiative.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you made a really good point that starting creating the culture, the homesteading culture or the farming culture at a young age is really important, because it's hard to step into that. I see we have several friends that have moved out this way and their kids are older and their lives are still in town and they have no interest to make cheese from the family cow or to kill a pig or to anything. I mean, they just want to be, their lives are in town, and understandably, I mean, they have the little league, they have the ballet, the dance, all this different stuff, the swim team. But I think there's something to it, like the struggle of, you know, just being in it, maybe not to a small business scale, but just homesteading and taking on that challenge at a young age. But then, you know, as you're seeing, and I'm starting to see, the children are starting to take ownership. I mean, Gabriel said, well, instead of paying me, can you just give me 32 hives this year and so I can make my own honey and sell it? And I mean, he'll make more money that way. And I'm like, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I'd love to do that and not to pay taxes. So, you know, but he's got this vision for his, you know, the next several years of his life. He wants to save money for this or that. And I think that's, you know, the families who are kind of so-called reclaiming this agrarian way of life didn't grow up in it. I think that's our duty is really to just jump into a certain point, knowing that we're going to fail and we're going to make mistakes, but we're creating like a way of life that for them, it's like, this is just normal. And we're also acquiring capital, whether it is through a desk job or, you know, agricultural, I think, to set the next generation up for a success. And like, and it just becomes, you know, this, we're pushing this ball up the mountain. And I think, you know, generation two, generation three, it just starts to roll, you know. And I think the one thing that can't be missed, though, is the love of it. It's not this, you know, we're beating our kids over the head to get out there and pull the potatoes. Or weed the garden, but there's a love and a joy and a celebratory aspect of it. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, we were out there last, I guess, 2 months ago, and just seeing your kids pick up the instruments really on their own and kind of, I feel like it just kind of culminates the whole thing of living, you know, this agrarian way of life where you're creating your own music, you're reading good literature, you're going to a good mass, you're eating good food and you have good neighbors. I mean, isn't that what we all want? You know, I mean, send us back to the, you know, I think just giving them the opportunity to be exposed to it and then pique their interest and then, you know, anything we could do to cultivate that, I think is, I guess that's where I see my purpose at this point, you know, at 40 years old, 39.
Yeah.
Just like,
no, it's liberating when you put things, I think actually that's a good way to wrap this up, is it's liberating to put things in their generational thought, because there's a tension you always feel. I mean, and you know, when you start homesteading, people are like, you know, I call it my, but you're not making blood sausage moment, which is, you know, right. We killed our first pig. And, of course, like any good millennial, we put it on the internet for all to see. And, someone said, oh, but you're not making blood sausage. You know, my response was, well, how many pigs did you kill this week, you know, in the city? And,
yeah.
But the tension I'm mentioning is that you always feel like, ah, I'm faking, yeah. You know, we're not really living yeah. this. And, actually the reality is it's, you're not faking it. You're having a cultural conversion within your home. And the thought that you can just make that happen
yeah, overnight,
you know, with a couple savvy purchases and, you know, some branding and some, you know, selfies with overalls on is ridiculous. But also when you're tending to the culture and even the interests of your children, and in a sense they are, you know, they're limiting because you're limited on the farm. So you right. limit those. And then you really nurture, our kids, you know, we have one, you know, Margaret Mary does everything. We have one who's just, he's really into making stuff with metal. I mean, most likely he will, you know, he loves blacksmithing and all that. And then, and the younger ones, they all, you know, there's pigs on the farm right now for the first time that I don't own any of them. The children own all the pigs right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
The cows are mine. They can back off. But to know that, all right, this capital that we're converting, that we're gaining as much as in whatever way we are, to convert it to a way of life towards our children is really, is a reasonable goal. And that's something that, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So, I think on that, I'd like to, Tommy, we're gonna have to have you back on, cause there's tons of stories, that I know of, cause I know you personally, and particularly all of our failures, we can laugh at each other. Like I said, maybe that would be a closing thought, is you definitely get a friend that you can laugh at each other with. Don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah.
And you don't need to start a blog, but Tommy, thank you for being on the Till and Keep podcast. I appreciate you and look forward to having you on next time.
This episode of Till and Keep has been brought to you by Tan, Fraternus, and Sword and Spade. Till and Keep is a podcast that shows how the primordial command from God to Adam to till and keep the garden applies whether you toil on a farm or in a concrete jungle. Visit tillandkeeppodcast.com to subscribe and follow the show. And use coupon code TILL25 to get 25% off your next order at tanbooks.com.